Valencia. Beats Puncher. Drills it in. Fired it in. Rocketed in by Jesse Lingard. From behind, with 10 players, Manchester United have taken the lead in extra time in the cup final.
The deep hole in the end, and Kalsri hits it in. It was almost gone by the sun. It is now. And who's it again? It's Kone again. He hadn't scored a goal for Sunderland before tonight, and now he's got two on such an important night. And surely now that is safety for Sunderland.
There might be more. They're attacking. It's 3-on-2 here. Yamat's going down the right-hand side. Daryl Yamat! Oh, my word! Newcastle have got 5! St James's Park hasn't been this loud all season. Spurs are being taken apart.
Hello and welcome to Where Was The Shout? With me, Mark Carlaw, Zachary Stevenson, and Rob Runciman.
Right.
This week we're going to be talking Premier League roundup. I mean, final weekend of football.
Yeah, but wait a minute, we never talked about our intro, because normally Rob says something funny, and now we just said all right.
I know. I did try and think of something funny.
You look a bit summer, you look a bit too relaxed.
I'm loving this.
We're actually out in the garden again, aren't we?
Yeah, well, where else are we going to be? It's a beautiful day, isn't it?
I'm actually getting burnt, but I've been out here for about 2 minutes.
And the vegetation here, we just said, it's like doubled in 24 hours. It's almost like, you know, the tropics or something like that.
It's lovely, I like it.
Amazonian jungle.
Okay, so we're going to be talking football from the weekend.
That would be a good
final
idea.
Final Premier League weekend. Also FA Cup final. Mourinho to Manchester United. Farewell the Bowling Ground and Euro 2016. Because predictions now, they're gone.
It's wrapped up.
The results are in though.
Nando's.
I hope you've got some vouchers.
By the way, Mark, you're sounding a bit croaky.
Yeah, I've not been very well. I've had a bit of a cold a week. Don't worry, it is contagious, and so you will definitely get this.
You've been out celebrating our qualification.
I've been looking forward to a good cold for a while.
No, it actually shouldn't be too bad. I'm on the tail end of it now, but yeah. Sorry if I sound a little bit myself.
No problem.
Before we talk football, though, how have you been? Because Zach, you were Wembley yesterday.
I was, yeah. It was
free tickets.
It was mixed emotions. Yeah, I had free tickets from Budweiser. I suppose I should mention them, really.
Yeah, probably.
But I was in the Crystal Palace section, which was slightly, you know.
Are you complaining?
The hardest part wasn't really not celebrating the United goals, which was quite hard, but it was trying to fake celebration.
Well, I did see a photo of you in a half and half scarf. I wonder what was going on.
Yeah, because I would never really buy one.
Yeah,
I'd buy one for an international friendly or something, like Brazil, Ireland, or something like that. You know.
You did have a Man United shirt on then.
I did underneath. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Did you have to wear like a leather jacket zipped right up?
I wore a shirt over it and
Bulletproof vest.
Bulletproof, stab-proof vest. Yeah. It's a motorcycle helmet. As well, and all sorts of things, yeah. Nunchucks, just in case.
So when Lingard's winner in, what did you do exactly?
Well, the handy thing is that everyone else around you is sort of
crying.
They're caught in their own moment, really. They're not really looking at you too much, but I kind of like.
They probably did look at you when you tore your shirt off and started swinging around your head and screaming.
I did feel a sense of like letting the team down, but. Yeah, that was another 40,000 of them doing the job for me, really, by going crazy. But you know, I looked at it and said, well, you know, I've infiltrated the Palace end, haven't I? You know, so I've taken three of their fans out of it, really, or two of their fans out of it. So,
brilliant.
And then I started a big riot, it was great.
Were they all okay, Palace fans? Because you did kind of mention
they weren't. They actually weren't. When we got in there, we originally the Palace fans really colourful, really really loud and passionate, and we thought, oh, you know, sympathetic for them. I thought, oh, well, you know, good for them, nice day. You know, if they win, fair enough. You know, but then gradually they just started getting more and more wanky. Like, and there was a couple of people there who obviously weren't Palace fans. They weren't making any song and dance. They were very discreet, and there was people all around getting really aggressive and getting angry and like sort of getting physical with them, you know. And,
Zach, you do realise everyone hates Manchester United. It's,
I know everyone hates Manchester problem. United, yeah, yeah. It's kind of meaninglessly, jealousy usually, it but, is, you know. Yeah. But it actually does make you
and
think.
Paul Ince.
You know, when I go to football matches, I do honestly feel some sort of social regression occurs. You know,
yeah.
We go back to this Neanderthal kind of animalistic sort of tribal state, and it's pretty pitiful.
Well,
but
well,
I guess
rugby,
it's life.
Rugby
in it, you know?
Fans mingle, don't they?
Yeah.
In all seriousness, I mean, I heard the Palace fans booing Wayne Rooney as he lifted the cup, and I just thought that's a bit of class. One thing I was proud about West Ham fans in 2006 is after that brilliant final with Liverpool,
we all stayed.
We were heartbroken. We stayed and applauded them. And outside the ground, everyone was sort of shaking hands.
Oh, yeah. Well, that was before the pub.
But I think, you know, I mean, it was actually before he lifted the trophy, actually, because most of them had gone by then, you know. But it was just immediately afterwards. I think it was Dan Walker was interviewing Rooney on the pitch, and it was coming through the system. And there was 20,000 Palace fans there just all booing. And I'm like, you're booing the England captain. You're ruining your own fucking day.
To be fair, he'll be getting booed by his own England fans in a few days.
I mean, you know, you just gotta think it doesn't do very much to dispel the notion of England fans being fickle and stuff.
No,
it's like,
no.
He's the England captain, you fucking idiots.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Give him some
totally
support. Like,
yeah,
know?
And also, like, you know, they played well, Man United, and so did.
I thought Rooney was awesome yesterday, actually. All over the pitch, every spraying balls around, like. And it made me think, because I thought he can't really play that role, because he can, like.
I'm not convinced, but I think it's definitely a great option for England. We'll talk about that later. But he was like, Rooney yesterday was a driving force when he went 1-0 down. He was the one that made that inspirational captain's run into the box.
Do you know what he reminded me of yesterday? He reminded me of Paul Scholes quite a lot.
His distribution's beautiful.
He also reminded me of Ross Barkley on his good days. I mean, that run he did for the equaliser, what a run.
A lovely cross as well.
And it was Giggsy, yes, because at one point he kind of swiveled through to players.
He went for about five players.
Yeah, went for five or six players, yeah.
Mm. Yeah, I think he had a really good game. It's actually quite promising for England.
And you know, I mean, you know,
plays for him.
If we're going to talk about the actual match, I mean, like, I turned on my Facebook as soon as I came out of the ground, looked at the feed, and you get these kind of curmudgeonly fans of like Liverpool and City going on about Clattenburg. It's like, all right, there was a couple instances where Clattenburg probably should have played advantage, but if you look at him again, right, he's got to make a decision. Like that, and he blows his whistle, and then, you know, I mean, the two of them are tangling as the whistle goes. And
I think what the problem he did in those decisions, because they were poor decisions, but I think the problem was he blew too early. Mm. They've both gone into each other, and before they've even gone to the ground, he's blown for a foul.
Just like
really,
he
should really give it
Chiato, like, didn't even think about it a few weeks.
But I think sometimes they give it maybe 1 or 2 seconds extra, because if the guy's got up, you think, well,
I think
it shows
a good sign of his, ability that he's able to quickly sort of misses, but then it shows a flaw on his character that he's too quick with the whistle. But the thing that annoyed me was fans suggesting that Clattenburg was doing it to benefit United.
If he was
out to benefit United, he would he may not have sent off Smalling. I know it's probably a yellow card on both occasions, right? But Damien Delaney, I mean, that, if you look at that again, what he did to Rojo, that could have been a red card. And if he was trying to benefit United, he would have sent Delaney off, you know.
Definitely, yeah.
So the notion that he was trying to assist United, and United battered them over the course of the 20 minutes.
Beforehand, I mean, you've got to be decisive as a ref, so you make that decision, and you can sometimes blow that whistle too quickly because of it when there's an advantage that could be played. I know, it is difficult. I'd hate to be a ref. I'd find it impossible.
Well, I did feel for him yesterday a little bit. I mean, I think the couple of decisions were incorrect, but I mean, as you said, Zach, it wasn't just one-sided. I think a few decisions even the other way were incorrect.
Yeah, there were a few up from both sides. And I mean, just watching the match from pitch level virtually, there's no way I got the impression that he was favouring United. I was thinking, that's not the right, you know, that's a free kick to us, blah, 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 but you know.
Yeah.
But you know, fans get blinkers on, don't they? Especially when you really hate a club, like some people hate Manchester United. You think every decision that's 50-50, definitely should have gone against United, you know. But
well, United were definitely the better side, had chances.
24 shots at goal, I mean, that's the most they've had in any game this year, I'm pretty sure.
But when
Puncheon
put that one away, you just thought, oh my God, this is it, Palace have done it.
I've got to say, what...
these little dance, and you thought, like, they're not coming back from this.
It was 78 minutes, I think.
But you know what, it's another thing. I think if Jason Puncheon was Belgian, he'd probably be playing for Liverpool now. or something.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah, he's a great player.
I think he's a really good player. And
he's come from non-league football. Yeah. Another one that's made
he was dropped out of the team, wasn't he? He was on the bench.
He was on the bench.
He was very unhappy about that.
I know you could say there's an element of luck to the goal because everything just went right for him. But that touch to take the ball down and the finish past De Gea on his near post, the greatest goalkeeper in the world probably, or one of them.
I'd say
he is at the moment,
I mean, that was a fantastic goal.
Yeah.
But the thing was, even at that point, I didn't sense any panic in United, and I just thought, 10 minutes to go, they'll get an equaliser, and within 3 minutes they were level. And even when they went down to ten men, I just felt they were in control of the match from almost start to finish, you know. And it would have been an injustice, really, if Palace had won. I think
that Smalling sending off is a bit embarrassing, though.
It was.
I don't really know why.
Something like that.
I don't know why he did that. Really, it was a bit of a silly challenge. I know he was trying to stop.
He's getting caught the wrong side a lot. I thought.
I think both occasions, what partially what happened was the slippery pitch, because the pitch was a bit slippery, and they were even watering at half time, even though there was rain.
Yeah.
And on both occasions, he got the yellow cards. He slipped.
Yeah.
You know, maybe he's wearing the wrong studs or something, but.
Yeah,
so maybe something to look out for. But I mean, Smalling's been fantastic all season. I just think, you know, anybody can get two yellow cards in one match, you know. And really, I mean, you know, Balassi was pretty much away, and I think he took one for the team there, didn't he, you know.
And so, also, I mean, it didn't make much of a difference anyway, because you went and scored even with the 10 men, didn't you? So
it made it all that more satisfaction. You know, when you win with 10 men, it's even more satisfaction.
Jesse Lingard getting the winning goal.
What a goal.
Come for the youth team, you're from Manchester.
You
come off the bench. You're obviously disappointed beforehand, you've been left out the side. You come off the bench to score the winner.
But we've seen it so many times over the last 12 years, haven't we? You got Lingard. Bournemouth Jackson was very unlucky to be left out of the squad. I'm very surprised at that, you know. Obviously Rashford, and you got, you know,
he played really well yesterday again.
He did, yeah, and I didn't actually see him going off injured. I thought he'd been tactical decision. I saw something happen, but I thought
it looked quite nice.
I was quite far away from it, but
it took a bit of a kick really to his knee, didn't
his knee, wasn't it?
Jarred his knee, and it was a bit worrying the way he was
limping. Okay.
Apparently they did say it's only a knock. It's not,
you know. I've been reading a lot about Rashford's inclusion in the European provisional squad, saying, oh, if you play for other clubs. I think maybe even you said it, Rob, but I think the guy is just a remarkable talent.
I just felt they missed a trick leaving Cowra out, because he's a totally different type of player.
But
the more and more I watch Rashford, I do think he could be.
You believe the hype? No.
I just think he really does have it. It's just that I think England have got other players that are ahead of him, and then Cowell's the other option off the bench. But maybe Rashford's the direct replacement for Welbeck. I think he is. He might even play him down the left hand side.
He can run at people, can't he? And he can run. He's exceptional. I mean, his movement yesterday was amazing.
Rashford can also play left or right as well. I mean, he was pretty much on the right yesterday. You know, I mean, and Martial was on the left, and then Rashford, you know, kind of they took turns really. And one last thing I want to make about United, Marcus Rojo is not a left back.
No.
I mean, he does not want to play left back. So often he was getting caught out of position, you know. And Rooney was dropping back in left back because Rojo wanted to play on the left wing.
Yeah, he got roasted
you know.
Up to Park the other day. As
yeah,
well.
He did. Yeah.
He should never ever play left back, you know. That's
he's not good enough.
So the fallout of the game, though.
It's not that he's not good enough. I just think he doesn't want to play left back. He wants to maraud up the left wing, you know.
Yeah, it's he's like, a winger. I think
if the manager says, look, you can play wing back, but I want you to prioritise staying in defence. And when we're pushing forward, we're dominating, and it's obvious that we've got possession, and we're obviously then you can come up the pitch. But just, you know, keep an eye on the defensive side of it.
Yeah.
You know. But it's modern defenders nowadays, isn't it? You know,
well, it's a lot of that boils down to the manager, who we're going to talk about, Van Gaal, because he's obviously there's talk of him all season has been this. He was on his way, really.
Yeah.
Because I mean, even yesterday I was watching the build up on the BBC, and I think I feel for Van Gaal a little bit, but you know, they were saying
I do as well. I mean, I'm as a person. I'm really fond of Louis van Gaal. I mean, he's been around my house for dinner plenty of times.
he's actually cooking now, isn't he?
He's actually cooking some vegan food for later on.
He's coming around a lot more now.
But I just think overall, if you look at Van Gaal's tenure at United, 49 league goals a season. I mean, it's 20-30 more than your average season for United. And it's obvious why he's sold most of the strikers. He is obsessed with possession. I think United have had the best... best, I use fingers to make inverted commas, position statistics of any club in the Premier League, whereas Leicester are the worst and they've won the title. And I think it's now shattering the myth that possession is the be-all and end-all of football. You know, I mean, the be-all and end-all of football is getting the ball into the penalty area and putting the ball in the fucking back of the net, isn't it? You know,
and
they seem so reluctant to do that. I mean, yesterday now they really had a goal. We could see a lot of the time, but even then there was periods where Carrick would tap it to Rooney and Rooney would tap it back to Martial and Martial would tap it to Rojo, and then and then it would end up back with Chris Smalling, and it's like, oh, I mean, there's a time and place for that, but at the end of the day you need to get the ball into the
game. I just think clubs have their traditions as well. Manchester United's always been about really exciting wingers
up front, and
you know, playing with real pace and, you know, just relentlessly attacking at pace. I've always been about that. And he's just made some baffling decisions this season, but he has brought through a lot of young players.
I
think, you know, we've made the point that a lot of it has been, a lot of the young players have bought him because he's actually stripped the squad quite bare
I have a theory for you, and this was brought up by, I think it was Gary Lineker yesterday.
One quick point is that you can't, but you can't blame the season for failing on the kind of injuries and at the same time take the praise for bringing in the young players.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, you've had to bring them in because of the injuries. They reckon that Van Gaal has always had a problem with older players, big egos, doesn't like them. He likes younger players that he can essentially bully in a way and say, I'm in charge.
Right.
And apparently that's one of his things he's had throughout his career, and they reckon that's a lot of the reason why he let go of a lot of players and likes to bring through the youth. Because one, I mean, I like bringing through the youth players, obviously, but I think he has let go some fantastic talent, really. And
exactly.
I think, you know, look at Hernandez and people like that. You know,
exactly. You know, an excellent point there. The squad was so thin bare up front that eventually Rashford made his debut because of all these injuries.
But he only came on because there was an injury.
Exactly.
He didn't get rid of Hernandez and let Wilson go out on loan because he thought Rashford was going to come in and be good enough, because he didn't play until about 2 months
ago. He only brought him
in
when he absolutely had to, you know. I mean,
it wasn't because of that. It was an injury during the game, wasn't it?
It was only 86 days ago that Rashford made his debut. Well, 87.
Yeah, he could be going to Euro 2.
I mean, if Louis van Gaal, and we've got to clarify, Louis van Gaal has not said that this was his plan, but if Louis van Gaal was trying to say, oh, I did this because I have faith in Rashford, you know, it's like, you know, why wasn't Rashford playing at the start of the season then, you know?
Yeah.
So that's a bit bogus, to be honest, but look, he did play in yesterday. He did get an injury, and he's been great for the last third of the season, really. And I think United have got a lot of exciting young players now, and
Foster
Mensah and Porto Jackson, and we mentioned them all a few weeks ago, but yeah, I'm encouraged.
Right, Mourinho then. Is he in? It looks like he's in to me.
It's almost certain now, doesn't it?
I mean, apparently
it looks like he's in, and all those young players will be shipped out on loan. No, I mean, I do expect that Mourinho will get the job now. BBC have put it in BBC don't put it on their main headline the day that United win the title unless they're nailed on.
Yes.
And I think Mourinho will keep faith with these young players. I don't think there's any reason why he would second guess them. To be honest, they're established members of the squad now. It's not like he's bringing them in from the academy, you know. They're in the squad, so he's going to use them, I think, you know.
Are you excited by that, Mourinho?
I have to say I am, yeah. I think, I genuinely believe that United can contend for the Premier League title next season now, with Mourinho in charge, you know. Like, any team that Jose Mourinho manages is going to be challenging.
Yeah.
Any team, you know.
I just think Chelsea are going to be worried as well. I mean, I think they've made a right wicket there.
Yeah,
I don't think he should have gone in anyway in the first place. They should have just backed him and get rid of the players that aren't performing.
He's
proven to be the best manager in the world over 10 years.
I think at the time, we said that, what do? You get rid of the whole squad? And we said that, well, you don't need to. You need to maybe get rid of one or two big ones to show,
nobody is safe.
Yeah. I'm the manager, no one's safe. You think you're the boss, you're not the boss. And that's what they should have done. And not only did they make a mistake, they've set a shockingly bad precedent, you know, because they've shown player power is ultimate.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean? It's absolute. And now what happens when the players get pissed off at Conte? He's going to be at the door as well. I mean, no way.
But it'll be interesting with Mourinho at Man United, because he's pragmatic as well, like Van Gaal.
Yeah.
Hasn't got a great record of bringing through young players. And these are like, you know, what we were talking about before, Man United start the plays, get the ball out wide, play with real pace, and young players coming through. I'm sure he'll do that. I don't think he's that naive to not go down that road.
I mean,
it would be interesting to see how he does it.
A lot of the United fans have got the reservations about Mourinho. Have thought, oh, you know, they think about that one match at Anfield where he parked the bus, blah, 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 you know. But, you know, I mean, I think of his Chelsea team, they were exciting. They scored lots and lots of goals. I think his Real Madrid team, they scored 100 goals every season. I think the Porto side, they played a bit, didn't they? You know,
And there are times to park the bus, and you have to do it. Oh, Fergie did it a couple of times. Was it, what cup final was it when they mugged off Arsenal?
Oh, who was that? Was that in the...
Or was it the other way around?
No. Well, Arsenal beat them on penalties in 2005. I don't know, but
I mean, the wrong way around.
Fergie did absolutely. I can remember plenty of games when Ferguson set his team around Paul Ince and Roy Keane. Yeah. I mean, you know what I mean? What do you call that? I mean, that is getting two solid central midfielders who aren't that creative. I mean, Roy Keane will always pass the ball sideways, you know. Roy Keane said always find a teammate.
That's later on, Nicky Butt, and then Phil Neville would have his role, wouldn't he?
Absolutely, I mean, you know, it's nonsense to suggest that top managers ignore that a side needs to be defensive. If you're conceding goals, you're going to lose matches, you know.
That's the Kevin Keegan
mentality, we'll outscore you, you know. That was never the Fergie mentality. The Fergie mentality is we're going to set a solid defence, Peter fucking Schmeichel in goal, Bruce and Pallister, and then later Yapstam, Vidic, etc.
Well, the best things are built from the back, aren't they?
You know, and then you get your exciting flair players who can create things and make things happen, and you know, and that's the way forward, and that's what Mourinho would bring to Manchester United. I'm positive of it, you know. I'm not necessarily saying they're definitely going to win the league next season, but I mean, it's going to be hard. But, and also Mourinho will attract some players over this summer that Louis van Gaal wouldn't have been able to do, you know. I mean,
we've not been in the Champions League yet, it would be difficult for Van Gaal, wouldn't it?
And so, Premier League's over.
Premier League's done.
Took a bit of time to get it finished, didn't it? Because they had that bomb scare
last week. Yeah, that was quite interesting.
Which was, you know, I mean, I remember as it was unfolding, thinking, you know, I would bet my... I was going to say something else, but I bet my little finger that is not an actual bomb. Absolutely, you know. But,
well, it was left by a security company. It was a fake version, wasn't it?
I mean, it's just incredible, isn't it? You think, right, we've got this device which looks like a bomb, right? It, to all intents and purposes, it's a bomb without explosives, right?
Yes.
What are we going to do with it? Should we make sure we take it home on the lads, or should we leave it in the toilets all the for 76,000 people that are going to turn up?
And it's cost millions, isn't it?
Millions. Yeah,
£3 million quid to United. Yeah. I think United could sue that private firm, probably get them closed down. You know?
Yeah.
But it was a farce, wasn't it? I mean, absolute farce. And I think, you know, at the time I was bemoaning Manchester United security, thinking, oh, it's that typical overreaction. It's probably somebody's gym bag, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
But they did everything right. It was meant to look like a bomb. So that's why they had to treat it.
It had a mobile phone structure and stuff. Yeah.
It's a training device that was supposed to look like a bomb. So for that reason, I mean. I did have my conspiracy theory at the time that what's the point in doing drills where everyone knows what's going on? Shouldn't drills happen when it's a surprise?
Oh yeah, that's our point. I mean? Yeah, apart from the management or something.
No, it's £3 million. It's an expensive exercise, but maybe it's worth it. You know, maybe that's really what happened. I don't know. But the game went happen so. Played a few days later. I mean, somebody up the echelons might have done this on purpose, and you know, let's make them pretend we did an accident, but really we did it on purpose. Because I was at Wood Green Shopping Centre just a couple of days before that, and there was a security drill, and I thought, well, they're happening a lot now. And Graham Souness was saying that he got patted down on extra security that day, which he'd never had before. Bit of a quiz.
That's because he's Graham Souness.
Pass the tin foil there, lads. I need to make a little hat, sorry.
So, results, gentlemen. Arsenal 4, Villa 0. Obviously, Villa, final game, gone. Ta-da.
Arsenal 4... insert name of non-existent club here, Neil. Just
well, obviously, I mean, last day of the season, Arsenal and Spurs were sort of
second place.
So it was really interesting. While Arsenal were only one up and Spurs were losing their game, you thought, oh, wouldn't it be hilarious if Villa did equalise?
But I mean, Villa, I mean, well, there's not much to say about Aston Villa now, is there? They're down.
I think we actually should boycott talking about Villa for a while, you know.
Yeah, I mean.
Apart from the fact they've got new owners, haven't they?
But Giroud got a hat-trick. I think Wenger's just been playing it non-stop.
Arsenal only play well when they've never got any pressure on them. Yeah. When they haven't got to win the league, nothing really going on, they suddenly play like champions.
I was just about to say about Giroud. Yeah, he's right. That type centre-forward where when the pressure's off, he looks great, doesn't he?
Yeah, when they've got to win a game, they don't look great.
Yeah.
I mean, having said that, you know, they probably did need to win this because obviously they wanted to finish above Tottenham. And Tottenham, Newcastle 5, Tottenham 1.
Mm. Yeah.
where did that come from? I didn't.
Ridiculous. Well, I mean, it just shows what Newcastle were kind of capable of all along, and you know, apparently Benitez won half the games that he was there. If he'd won half the games as at the start of the season, they'd be pressing for Europe, wouldn't they? You know.
Yeah.
I don't know what has happened to Tottenham there. I mean, it was important for them to finish second of the last.
Well,
for the fans, just to get that 21 years off their back.
I know, but
to let that happen, it's just crazy.
Yeah. I just think that once that when that Hazard goal went in, their season was finished. Like, I know they think, oh, we'll try and finish second, but it's you know, your legs start to go when what you the thing you've been really striving for is no longer attainable. And
I think the other thing as well is that they did get a few injuries towards the end of the season. I mean, they had the likes of Ryan Mason and Tony Carroll,
was suspended for the last three, wasn't he?
It's good, two good young players, but they're not really sort of that level, are they?
And what I found shocking was that it showed they've got a bit of a weak mentality, Tottenham, which I didn't think they had. I thought they were very strong.
I think it was more they had a lot of injuries towards the end of the season. The players that came in weren't really up to it, Mason and Carroll. But having said that, That Chelsea game, they lost their heads a bit, didn't they? Maybe they just they did the last three games over the season. I think they showed good mentality. Walker and Rose in that Chelsea game, and then against Newcastle, although Rose didn't play as Davis, the fullbacks lost the plot, I thought.
Yeah.
You know, worries me for England a bit, Rose and Walker
and
possibly
playing. You know, in what's been a bit of a freak season, you're going to get a few freak results, aren't you? That absolutely was a freak result. And Newcastle, again, the whole thing about having nothing to lose. They're already relegated. They play with
the
freedom,
off now.
Uninhibited, and the creative players were able to just float around and do what they're good at, you know. And Spurs, I don't know, maybe they were nervous. But,
I think they could. I think in what we were talking about earlier, I think the Chelsea game was just, that was the game, wasn't it? The season seemed to have just fallen apart at that point. I don't think they really needed a result there, and to lose like they did, and obviously because of it was obvious the way they played on the day in terms of the fouling that was being committed and stuff, that they were really frustrated.
I mean, if I'd been a Spurs player, I would have thought to myself that as it transpired, even if we'd beaten Chelsea 10-0, it wouldn't have made a blind bit of difference because Leicester went on to win.
Exactly, it was gone anyway.
You know,
I just think they've had a great season, Tottenham, they have, but it's just a real sort of disappointing end for them, for their fans.
Absolutely,
really.
Yeah.
But they're in the Champions League. I mean, they can't really moan too much.
And they're automatically into the group stages too, which I think is very important.
Exactly. And Newcastle, right, now that they're no longer a Premier League club, they're down, but a good result for them, really, considering, you know, it's a nice way to start. You know, it gives you a bit
it's
of a hope,
and it looks
it?
Like Benitez is going to stay as well.
Rafa Benitez is in the Championship. He started the season as Real Madrid's manager.
No, he's in the Championship.
Well, exactly. a result like that, it just sort of suggests we do have good players, got a good manager. You know, let's stick together and come back.
And I think, I've never really questioned Rafa Benitez as a person. I think he's always seemed like a decent man. I think it'll show a tremendous amount of decency if he stays at Newcastle.
Yeah.
Because he went in, you know, obviously took the money that was on offer to keep him out of the relegation. And I think to just jump ship then once it happened would be a bit, you know.
Probably he's got go the job. Players, well, the players feel the same. I mean, there'll be a lot of clubs after Townsend, Wijnaldum.
Yeah.
Couple of other guys, Lachelle at the back.
Well, I've heard Shelby's apparently
committed.
Shelby,
Aarons,
apparently
he's
committed his future. Arsenal, he's saying he's going to stay a season at least.
I think they're a big club, Newcastle, and if they can keep the manager there, I think those players will probably stay as well. You know.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly.
So I'd be surprised if Alan Joss Townsend thought he was bigger than Rafa Benitez. You know. But then again, modern footballers. But
it depends on their age sometimes, isn't it? You know, they might think, well, I've only got a couple of years left in the Premier League. I don't know if I want to waste one of them.
Townsend's got another decade, really, isn't he? I mean, if he's he keeps himself fit and stuff. I mean, was he 23? Something like that.
Yeah, he's quite young. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see what happens to them.
Mitrovic as well, you know, I mean, he scores goals, doesn't he? So.
Well, if they keep that squad together, they should be coming straight back up.
If they keep that squad together, I'm sure
two or three will leave, and they might leave late in the summer.
That's the problem.
Yeah, but then you've got to invest wisely then, replace them with the top Championship players this season.
I think they'll be alright. I think they're one of the teams that have gone down that you'd think will come straight back.
Well, it's worrying for people, teams like Aston Villa, because, you know,
That's one more automatic place, really. And it's really, I think it's really sad for teams like Brighton, do you know?
Again, have blown it again.
I couldn't believe that, actually, just touching on that briefly, like that first half against Sheffield Wednesday, second leg, absolutely murdered them. Should have been 5 or 6 nil up, you know?
And then
the first chance to Wednesday get the scores and yeah, but anyway, fair play to Wednesday.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah, they're in the final now, so it'll be interesting. West Ham sort of blew it really, although the result yesterday for Manchester United winning the cup has got us into the Europe anyway, but they went away to
Stoke. When you went 1-0 up, I thought,
we absolutely destroyed them first
half. Talk about Brighton, it was similar to that.
It was just ridiculous.
4-5 up.
But you just know from watching West Ham that 1-0 was never going to be enough at half time.
No, and it was one of the things, it just felt like it wasn't their day, you know, it wasn't going in. All right, we went one up, but we should have beat it at half time, it should have been at 3 or 4.
You've only missed chances in the second half.
I think
it's
kind of stupid result that sums up West Ham's season, really. Have you seen a film called The Sunshine Boys with Walter Matthau and George Burns? And there's one bit where he's talking to him, he says, "We're not going to stop for the little things, we're going to stop for the stupid things." That was a stupid thing. I think the stupid things, I mean, you should not have lost 2-1 to Stoke.
No.
In a game where they don't need to win it. You know?
It's similar to Spurs. We've had a brilliant season. You can't argue against that. It's been fantastic. You know, it feels like West Ham are back with the style that we want to see. Mm. But you just feel that they could have been even better.
Yeah.
And they beat Manchester United last Tuesday. If they'd beaten Swansea on the Saturday before, like should have done, but played awfully and deserved to lose the game, but they should have beaten them, should have turned up.
Yeah.
And then won that game at Stoke. West Ham would be in the Champions League next season.
Yeah, I know.
And there's other missed opportunities that have gone as well. I know the season's about ifs or buts.
Yeah.
You get what you deserve at the end, I think, after 38 games. But I just felt it could have been even better.
Tell me about it. It's a bit like the 2002 World Cup sort of theory that I always have about Ireland, you know, but I've probably said it several times on the show before, where that if you know we'd actually had Roy Keane and won the group, we would have then played Paraguay, South Korea, USA, and Turkey on the way to the final. Yeah. Anyway, but West Ham, it's been a season of missed opportunities, isn't it? I mean, they could really be in the Champions League.
Well, is that stat? Yeah. If the league was between the top 10 sides in the league, West Ham would have won it.
Yeah,
it shows you where they've gone wrong, doesn't it?
Yeah, it shows you know? We're not raising our game for the smaller teams, you know, no disrespect to them, but that's the problem. We're raising our game for the big teams.
And I mean, this season, won at Anfield, won at Emirates, Etihad,
everywhere.
It's, it's been.
Yeah, and also, look at the FA Cup as well, you know, could have got further there, you know. Well,
I know,
I just think. Bilic had a brilliant season. I just think sometimes could just tie it up a bit in midfield, just play the extra man. And that's where they've gone wrong. They've been leaking in goals, but they do have a good defence.
Yeah.
It's not the actual defence's fault. It's just
it's strange.
A bit naive
you think a manager that was a central defender, rock solid, would not be aware that if you're a part of a central defensive unit, you think, well, we need that extra bit of support from the midfielder in front of us, and he hasn't really
we've got Aubameyang in the squad as well, but having said that, we wouldn't have had all these amazing games if it had been played like that. You know, these 3-2s, these 3-alls.
True, it's science. I mean, it's got to come from somewhere, isn't it?
And I've really enjoyed that, to be honest, even though I've thrown away a few games. I've really enjoyed those games.
It's been
and
a roller coaster season.
I think we're a club on the up. I don't think this is a blip season. You know, I don't think next season we'll be in the bottom half and struggling. I think we'll be probably in the top half and succeeding.
What I hope next season, Mark, that, sorry to interrupt you, is that all the season tickets, that people make sure that if I'm not going to go to the game, I'm going to give it to somebody who can go, so that you fill it every place and create that atmosphere.
I have to say that is a worry I thought about recently. Yeah, I think there are quite a lot of people who bought these cheap
£200 for a season ticket.
They might not even bother playing up, so it might be a few, couple of thousand.
Yeah, interesting. We'll see. I'm not so sure. I don't know. But I mean, I think there's a lot.
We'll
of
be there, though, won't we?
We'll be going nuts. We've got tickets as well to the Juventus, the friendly.
Oh,
nice. Quite exciting. So moving on to other results. Southampton 4, Palace 1. Southampton, you know, what a season, really. I mean, that Coman, I think he's incredible.
Well, I remember saying to you at the start of the season, after about 10 games, you were saying, oh, they don't look like the same side, they're not playing much. But you know, they
made me look a right knob now, aren't they?
Well, no, because they're just going about they're consistent. They're just going about their business like they were the year before, maybe weren't quite getting the results, and they've picked up again. At the end of their season, it's been brilliant.
Yeah.
They spanked Man City.
Yeah.
You know, they can't remember they beat a couple of weeks ago. It was a big result.
I think, do you know what? If we're looking for champions 2017, because, you know, crazy season, this time last year, Leicester City had the best.
I think Villa might win it.
This year, apparently, no one's picked up more points in 2016 than Southampton.
Is that right?
I believe really? So. Or you're maybe Leicester, but
I think you're right there because they have an incredible run.
I think Southampton have been absolutely fantastic, you know.
And as you say, they go about the business quietly. They're not a glamour club. They don't go around, you know, they're not making headlines every week. And I think that suits them, really, because it just gets you going with your business. Unfortunately, I think that's where they're not saying where, you know. West Ham is a little bit different, but I feel like it is because of the new stadium. We do get a little bit of added pressure, and when there was a sort of sniff of Champions League, we seemed to be, it was talked about quite a hell of a lot in the newspaper, but it never really, nothing was mentioned with Southampton really about them going to sneak in.
Well, it's because they crept up, wasn't it, rather than had a great start, and then like last season which they did, and they didn't really maintain it.
But they've got some cracking players.
They really do, they do remind me in certain ways of Leicester, you know. I mean, they have that solid sort of midfield, which Leicester really
Wanyama's a beast in there, isn't he?
Except if he can keep it on the pitch. I think he's been sent off three times this season, and he did his fourth against some team I saw recently, I can't remember which one it was. But and then they got options up front. They got Long, Pele, Mane, and Charlie Austin. I mean, that's four players that can score goals, you know?
I mean, there's two centre halves are solid, aren't they?
Funts and
Van Dijk, good players, an excellent goalkeeper.
Van Dijk has been immense as well. I mean, he was linked with bigger clubs before he left Celtic, when I think Southampton, the Dutch connection, maybe Koeman swung it, but he'll end up at a bigger club eventually, I'd say, you know.
But no, great finish this season.
And then Fraser Forster as well. I mean, we could talk about the whole side, really. Just...
I mean, good call. I mean, if you think, you know, if they spend wisely this summer, they invested a fair bit of money in, say, a good striker, a couple of little additions here and there. I mean, you're looking at a team that could be fighting for top four very comfortably this season.
It could be, I mean, Leicester have proved that anything's possible now, haven't they?
I mean, it's going to be an interesting season next season. If you look at, you know, like we were talking about Manchester United earlier, obviously Mourinho, you've got Pep going to Man City, and the changes going on at Chelsea, Klopp's West Ham.
Liverpool, you know?
I mean, I think you've got a lot, you know, Tottenham, Chelsea, all these clubs all coming together. I think you've got probably about eight teams that are going to be fighting for the top four, easy.
I'd say maybe more.
Seriously,
it's just been.
With all this new money as well, you know, a team that's mid table could spend £20 million on a player.
Well, look at West Ham this week, bid £31 million for Lacazette. Yeah, I mean, it shows there's money, and they said there's more to go there. Probably up to about 40.
You want to activate Jamie Vardy's release clause.
Yeah, I've heard about this, but apparently it's not so much that it couldn't happen, but apparently his way, if it was to happen, the problem would be for him to move, he'd want ridiculous wages.
Yeah,
I think he was
no disrespect to West Ham, but I mean, if he's not going to see the job out and have that season in the Champions League with Leicester, it's going to be a huge club.
I agree. He's not going to come to us. You know, we're not in that position.
No, not just yet. Maybe in a few years' time, you know.
But I love Jamie Vardy at West Ham, but I like to think that he'd stay at Leicester. He's come from non-league football and just finish off this story. It's wonderful.
Finish
story
the story. Have Champions a season in Champions League, you know.
Yeah. And then if he does succeed there, does well for England, then maybe consider one of the big boys.
Although he will be 30 by then. So, and I don't want to sound pessimistic, but I don't think he's going to have a similar season next season. I don't know.
Well, this is the other thing. We'll see. This is the other thing about him. He's 29 now. He's been having this incredible season. He might do it again next year, but he might be thinking, you know, there's a chance of a huge transfer this summer
that will never get again.
Make him a multi millionaire for the rest of his life. Set him up. I mean, I don't know. I mean, he's obviously got a decent amount of money. Premier League footballers just won the Premier League, but his wages could be quadruple, couldn't they?
I do think that, you know, obviously with Vardy, over the next few months now, image rights and sponsorship and stuff like that, and Leicester will have to re-look at his contract again. I think that's inevitable. I think he's going to be okay, considering that most Premiership footballers can actually buy a house every couple of weeks. I don't think he's going to be worried about if he's going to be able to send his kids through college.
No, that's right. Yeah,
but I get your point. Obviously, he's going to, you know, footballers are mad greedy, aren't they?
And also, it's the stadiums as well, isn't it?
Yeah, it's the playing for a huge club.
Yeah,
you might never get a chance again.
Imagine Manchester United coming and think, well, you know. Or Man United,
or a big club in Spain or Italy. I mean, maybe not Italy, but you know,
Barcelona.
Yeah,
imagine Vardy and Messi together.
Well,
when Neymar
goes to United, there's going to be a slot in the squad available, isn't there?
Yeah,
you know?
That's it. Yeah. So season's over, Premier League's done. We did sort of touch on it. The farewell Bolin ground, and you was there, Rob. The final game, it was West Ham Man United, massive. what a game that was. I mean, it really was remarkable.
It was the most unbelievable football atmosphere I've ever seen, being involved in. It was incredible. I was there with my brother from start to finish.
Did you cry? Just,
I had tears in my eyes as I walked out.
Yeah.
One night, the first time I tears in my eyes is that when my way came on at the end of the game, thanks to Archie.
Yeah.
That always gets you, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
And, yeah.
And then as I took one last look at the pitch as I came down the stairs,
you thought, oh.
And walked out.
Yeah.
Because I was in the East Stand where it all sort of began for me as well. We were lucky enough to get tickets there.
Yeah.
Just go with my dad's, you know, first games in 1986. You know, 30 years I've been going there. So I've always loved that little stand as well, which has been like untouched really.
Yeah.
The one part of the ground is still the same. Yeah, it was incredible. A fantastic game of football as well. Man United fans added a lot to it, you know, they were great behind the goal there.
Yeah, they were great voice, Man United.
And obviously they had a lot to play for as well. You know, it was a big game.
Yeah.
There's a chance for Champions League football for United, and you know, we're still going for European football. I thought we'd blown it when we went 2-1 down, but sort of coming back the last 12 minutes, I mean, that's the perfect script, isn't it? You know, be 2-1 down, 12 minutes.
And also for a team like, against a side like Manchester United, you know, a huge club, and then to, you know, it's just a brilliant way to say goodbye on the ground, really. I mean, it couldn't have gone any better. I mean, when we were 2-1 down, I thought the game was gone and we were going to go out on defeat, but. And then when we got one back, I felt that it'd be not, I'd accept the draw. You know,
yeah.
But to
I wish you had, because if it had been a draw, yeah. Mate, it would have been in Champions League now. Yeah,
it's a good point. But yeah, it's one of those things.
But that moment when the equaliser went in, I've never heard a roar like it up to Park. Yeah. I've heard a few, obviously, but when Antonio scored that one, I felt like the place was going to explode.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
The winner a few minutes later, that was brilliant.
Yeah.
Absolutely brilliant. Shame about what happened to the bus before the game. But what people got to realise is just a few idiots. And the
really
media
was,
tried
yeah.
to make out
yeah.
with their photos, because there's about 60,000
people.
And it
was a little bit
there,
silly, really.
Trying to make out, it was loads of fans. It was probably about 20 idiots just lobbing stuff.
And
the
problem, they kind of ballsed up. It was a mess. I think the whole coaching was a mess from start to finish, from all sides, Manchester United included, I think, because West Ham were aware that it was obviously the last game. There was going to be a lot of fans outside the ground that didn't have tickets and just going to have basically a carnival in the street.
Yeah.
They didn't really warn Man United of the issue. West Ham got there much earlier, and even when they apparently struggled to get through the crowd, but you know we're talking 2 or 3 hours earlier. So the Manchester United, why weren't they warned? Why didn't they say, look, you're going to have to get here very early. This is going to be a nightmare. Because Man United were stuck on that street for about 2 hours.
Yeah.
And apparently a lot of the issues wasn't to do with Man United, West Ham fans starting at Man United, because I don't think the fans were aware it really was Manchester United's coach, because it didn't have any badges on it or anything. It was the fact that police, riot police, were trying to control the fans, to try and get the coach through.
Yeah.
West Ham fans have now clocked on, and apparently the fans were quite, the police were relatively violent towards the West Ham fans, and essentially trying to drive into them. And there was a lot of problems, and I think then that's where the aggression started. And then obviously West Ham fans have clocks.
Yeah.
The reason they're doing this is because
that's
Man United.
It's basically, it's badly organised, and there wasn't enough police
poor.
There. And but you know, you can't condone what happened.
No,
but
can't condone it. But it's always a bit silly.
It's
could have been well, easily could have been avoided. Just get here early.
The media, like every day for the next 4 days, it's back page about thugs and this and that. They didn't want to talk about the game.
But it's headlines, isn't it? It's
well, yeah, it's headlines.
Yeah,
but they're being a bit more careful about Liverpool fans now. It was absolutely disgraceful. Loads not. All Liverpool fans again. It was just a few bucks, but out in Basel the other day,
yeah, it was pretty shocking.
There's evidence of it.
They don't
say anything about it. Nothing at all.
Very strange. And they call it a scuffle.
They couldn't wait.
About 50 man brawl. But yeah, there you go.
But anyway, I mean, I didn't even see any of that. For me, it was just a great night of football.
But again, I mean, I think if you want to, you know, if you really investigated and what goes on outside every single ground every week, you're going to get twats at every single
bugs at every club.
But every match you would say, oh, there was a punch up in one pub, there was some trouble over there.
People drink alcohol before they go to these games. It's the part of the whole thing, you know. I mean, I don't even drink anymore really, and I was tempted to have a pint before the match yesterday.
It's like
come on, it's a football, we have to have a drink. We didn't in the end. We went to Sam's Chicken instead, right?
Right.
But you mix that with the whole tribalism involved in football, the atmosphere, there's that smell in the air, isn't there? Yeah. That you associates with football. It's
sulfuric.
Plastic, I don't know what
it plastic
is,
beer, you know, on the floor.
Yeah, it's just and it gets people going, and things are going to happen, and people are thick as well. You know, a lot of people are thick.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, and also like you were saying earlier, you get that sort of like mob mentality, and sometimes I think you get caught in it even when you're not really part of it.
Yeah,
you
yeah.
get sometimes it, get a bit yeah, you know.
Absolutely, I remember when I, you know, going to Turner's Cross, and I. Years ago, and like Pat Morley would come back to play for Shelburne against Cork City and be calling him every name under the sun. It's like, why? He's moved to Dublin because they're not professional footballers, and he's gone to play for a Dublin side. I mean, what the hell are we getting so uptight about? You know, it's crazy, but you don't think straight when you're in terraces,
don't.
You know, as they were in those days.
You get caught
up
in it a bit, don't you? And it's a bit,
football fans are retarded, aren't they? No, present company included, I'm not disputing it, yeah.
So yeah, bowling gone. It's over, and you know, it's sad. But I think you know,
I did hear that the West Ham fans that were responsible for that trouble had been banned from the bowling for life.
Yeah, that's great. Imagine
was that your joke, Rob? Was it?
No, I'll take that.
Yeah. So there we go. Euro 2016, though, gents. This is
wow. We're just a couple of weeks away now.
I know. Because this is basically our last episode of the series, essentially. Because obviously, but we're going
to
do.
We just arbitrarily decide to stop the series and start a new one whenever we want. It's not about year or time of the year or anything.
Well, we'll do a special. We'll do a Euro couple of special Euro episodes, won't we?
This is it.
This is it.
No, we will. We'll be meeting up during the Euros to discuss what's going on. So yeah. We'll be reverting away from Premier League football for a while.
It's no point really doing episodes to talk about transfer rumours.
Well, if something big happens, we can discuss it. But
yeah.
Stay tuned anyway, but
what's your feelings? Are you excited? Are you getting a bit excited?
I'm convinced Ireland are going to win it. It's going to be a Northern Ireland Republic of Ireland final.
Well, this is the thing about I say every week now, but the thing about Leicester winning the Premier League makes you believe anything can happen in football now, so why not, you know?
Well, yeah, and you think, you know,
Richard Keogh header after 69 minutes.
Oh, that's so brilliant. But I mean, yeah, as you say, Leicester this season, you think, is it England's year? You know, it's been our country's had the most bizarre Premier League season. We're bringing in that excitement from Tottenham and Leicester into our squad.
But I don't think Leicester winning it would be like England. I think it'd be more like if Spurs had won it, you know. Because I mean, England have got a history at international tournaments. They have got to. They've won one, the World Cup. Obviously, they've got to semi-finals. And they should be there thereabouts usually, but they just never seem to be. And I think
we do have a cutting edge for the first time in years now of the likes of Harry Kane, Vardy. Sturridge, these guys.
Dele Alli, of
course. Dele
Alli now. But I don't know, his squad selections are bizarre. But the thing is, the first 11 on the pitch will be more, doesn't pick itself, but most of them do, about eight of them do.
Yeah.
And they're all good players. It'll just be interesting to see how he goes about it, Hodgson.
I think when you're talking about squad selections, though, I mean, you can ask 50,000 football fans to pick their top 23 players to go on that plane,
and
there'll be 50,000 different combinations.
Yeah, but when you see,
I mean?
Yeah, there would be. But when you see someone like Fabian Delph named in it, he's completed one set of 90 minutes all season for Man City.
Yeah.
You wonder why. I know he did play well. I know Delph played well at the start of qualifiers.
Delph?
And, well, I think they'd want to see what the deal is with Wilshere and Henderson.
Yeah.
Wilshere's obviously been out the whole season. Henderson's been out for 6 weeks, just come back. So I look at them in the three friendlies.
Henderson's had a poor season. That's why I'm confused with Henderson. And also,
well, he's been injured a bit, isn't he? And,
but Jack Wilshere is a very odd selection. I mean, come on, he hasn't kicked a ball really all season. I mean, he shouldn't really be in contention.
I disagree in that because he's such a class player, and England lack a little bit. That's one area where I'm not sure who they're going to pick in central midfield. But I think they're just going to look at him in the friendlies. If he looks poor in those three games.
Or not fit enough.
But he's the one guy.
Mexico, is it?
Turkey.
Yeah, Wilshere's the one guy I gamble on.
I always mix up Mexico and Turkey.
They are very similar.
Now, Wilshere's the one player I would gamble on with fitness wise.
Yeah.
I would have a look at him.
He has got that something extra, he'll pop up with a crucial goal in a big match, won't he? I remember him scoring against United at Emirates a few years ago, and he's got it in him to take on the big boys, go toe-to-toe with them and win, you know.
Yeah.
You do want players like that in your squad, don't you?
I think England's real problem is at the back. And that's for the first time in years, really. You've got serious problems there.
Yeah.
That's where
they
might come unstuck.
You know, I didn't really think about that until recently. I looked at the options at the back and they're not brilliant.
No, they're not.
I mean, I don't think they're a cause for massive concern. Not that you'd be having sleepless nights over them, but I wouldn't be very, very optimistic.
Well,
about
the days of, you know, Ferdinand and Terry, you know, it was a lot more, you know, you felt a lot more comfortable with that.
Potentially, and, Stones and Smalling could be brilliant, but then we've seen a few mistakes, haven't we?
Yeah, Stones, well, really, as long as Chris Smalling wears the right studs.
Yeah, it's the right slippers.
I mean, I think you just got to make sure that you've got midfielders in there who can, you know, hopefully make sure that there's not too much exposure to the back four. And,
well, that's where Dyer comes in. I think he's definitely going to play.
Mm.
Really?
Dyer just hold that together. Absolutely. Have players playing around him.
I think he's probably, you know, the best player in that position in the country at the moment, you know.
It's like, yeah.
I don't see anyone as strong as him in that position, you know.
No.
Then Rooney might play in midfield because he's looked quite good there in the last couple of games.
The final, I mean, I thought he was brilliant. I thought he was really good.
I think the key for Rooney is if he plays with the desire that he showed yesterday. That's the thing. Because I've seen him playing that role for Manchester United. I mean, even on Tuesday against Bournemouth, he was spraying it around nicely, but it was like a friendly. Mm. Yesterday, he was doing exactly the same thing, but he was running around getting the ball.
One thing I noticed of Rooney yesterday was like the old Rooney. He was getting really angry and it looked like he was going to lose his head a couple of times. He could have got off, because when he went that challenge,
there was a point he'd already been poked. He had a challenge which was touch and go.
It was a bit of a
he kind of almost dived looking for a penalty and showed the reaction to the referee. Mm. And Clattenburg could easily have gotten another yellow card.
Because he's got funny. Because he's quite like a clever guy, Rooney, really, and he's really? A bit powerly, but he's quite powerly with the ref, isn't he? If you notice, in most games, he's always talking to the ref.
Well, in the way that you call your friend a cunt,
I think you see all the captains in the Premier League doing that. They're all at the ref.
He's quite on it, and it was like yesterday. And every time he zoomed into him, he's having a conversation with the referee all the time about what's been going on. And he does seem quite calm. It's not like he's shouting and screaming. He's just talking about the game. So I think he knows what he's doing. But then when the game was getting away from United, when they went 1-0 down, you could see he was getting the right hump. And then it was like the old Rooney, when it zoomed on him, you could see he was swearing horrifically at the ref. And he's walking away. He's going to flip in a minute.
Because you know
what? That's when he seems to be at his best, I think.
You know the way you see Rooney in interviews and it's like, and you kind of think he's very good at like quiet. But then I was reading was it Luke Shaw on the programme yesterday. He was saying you don't want to be on the end of a telling off from Rooney.
Like, really?
He's pretty scary.
Yeah, I bet he is. Yeah, he comes across. Yeah. He's a winner, isn't he? And I think when he thinks something's going against him, and it was like against West Ham, wasn't it? When I was watching on telly again, he was talking to the ref all the time. He seemed quite calm, and
I thought he played quite well in that game.
When that game was going against him, he gets really angry.
I'll tell you, a guy came on that game for Manchester United was Carrick. Came on and was wonderful, I thought.
Mm.
They've discarded him again, England. That's what I'm talking about in the squads. I mean, a lot of people disagree with me over this, but I still think there's a place for Michael Carrick. If Dyer's injured, who do you want to play at the base?
Carrick.
I don't know. I've been watching that all season. I think. Right, Carrick, he's nice when he's got the ball at his feet, right? I think from watching too many times a season when he's not on the ball, he's a liability. He lets players drift past him. He can't tackle, really.
I think in
a big competitive international tournament, I think Mike Carrick's had his day.
I think there's two different types of teams that England need to consider, and that's when they're playing a top side like Spain. It's your Germany, where they're going to have the ball. You pick a team that's going to be the best on the break. So that's maybe when you play, you drink water in there.
And
Vardy plays up front, you know, because he's playing on the break. When you've got possession, then someone like Michael Carrick comes into the side.
When you've
got 60-70% of the ball. But maybe they won't have a lot of that in this tournament, England.
And also, talking about Euros as well, the Spain squad, there's a lot of big names omitted from the Spain squad.
I mean, Cazorla isn't there, Mata's not there, Costa's not there.
Yes, that's
shows the strength of their
French squad, as well. The French scary, left out about three strikers that have scored over 25 goals
Benzema
a season.
Benzema's
in
the squad, is he?
Isn't he?
I don't think Benzema's in the squad.
There must be a personal issue.
Yeah, because there's an issue with this bribe thing going on. He's been bribing his teammate, so they're not picking him. He's still playing for Real Madrid every week and scoring every week.
He's been left out. Lacazette's been left out. He's got 20-odd league goals. And that Gamero at Seville, he's got 20-odd league goals.
That's interesting selections.
Yeah.
I'm so excited.
That's strange. Giroud instead of Benzema. I mean,
They've got
Griezmann as well, who looks phenomenal. Yeah, doesn't he? You know,
him and Payet on the wings. I think that's where they're going to go.
Yeah. It's going. I mean, who knows?
Ireland have got John Walters, lads. So.
John Walters.
Well, Shane Long, he can score against anyone. He scored against the world champions.
Well, he's Dublin, Southampton. You know. I mean, he's a great player. You know, he's been excellent this season. I think he's going to be. I still think Ireland have got a good chance of doing well out there.
Well, yeah, they'll play on the break.
Only reason why I can't do well.
They'll stay strong. They'll play on the break and.
We have one of the most solid defences in all of Europe. I mean, I think only two or three teams conceded fewer goals during qualifiers, and that's in a group with Germany and Poland.
That's what I'm about to say to you. It wasn't like you've come for an easy group.
A poor group.
And you kind of well, we kind of
and Scotland, if you consider them. As
yeah,
well,
yeah. You've had some tough games to get there, and I think they fully deserve to be there, and I think Ireland will no doubt go there and play well.
I do fear a bit for Northern Ireland. I think they did really well in the qualifiers. The rest of the teams in the group weren't great. They were quite fortunate in that department. I'm not taking anything away from them. They qualified they qualified relatively comfortably as well.
Yeah.
But I look at their squad and they've got players playing for Ross County and some really poor teams. And
yeah, and you think they will struggle. Clubs.
You know, they could get a hammering. You know.
Oh, Wales as well.
Big Germany, is it? I think Germany's group.
Yeah, they are. You know, so. Yeah, and is it that and. Is it Sweden? Is it Germany?
Sweden and Ireland.
Sweden, yeah.
That's right, yeah.
We've got three tough teams, Belgium, Italy and Sweden, but I think we can beat any of them, to be honest.
Yeah. I mean, I think, yeah. The Belgians, they're a strange side. I mean, they on paper, they should be, you know, considered probably one of the favourites to win it.
I wonder what the odds are for Ireland to win all three group games. It must be pretty high.
I'll stick a fiver on. Talk about betting, I put yesterday down a bet on a tenner for Man United to win 2-1, obviously, because it was bloody.
It doesn't count for extra time,
does it? Count for extra time.
It's annoying, isn't it?
How annoying. I just had a feeling 2-1. I knew it'd be a tight game.
Yeah, I said 2-1 as well. I Andy Potter from my band, he said to me 4-0 United. I said, no chance.
Yeah, final United
we've only scored 4-1 all season. That was against Midtjylland. I mean,
it's a tie, isn't it?
2-1, I said, and.
I had a bet on the West Ham Man U game beforehand, actually, when I was there, on West Ham to win both teams to score. 9-2, that came in.
Nice.
Nice. 45 quid.
Nice.
So that added to, I've got to say that earlier.
So, our predictions, speaking of which, Mark, should we go into our predictions?
Oh, yeah, so we should look at the predictions, shouldn't we? Right. Is it, Zach? It's over.
It's over.
It's finally over.
Can I cook you the Piri Piri chicken instead of taking to Nando's?
We could do that, I wouldn't mind.
I'm pretty sure I finished last, anyway.
Right, yes. Right, I finished top, 87.
Oh, what's happened there?
You're on 85.
Hold on, stewards.
Stewards inquiry.
85 you finished on, and 72 for Zach.
Do you know that bit in Father Ted when they have the raffle, and Father Ted is planning to rig it, and he says over the microphone before, he says, "Now, just before we do this, I'd like to say the last raffle I was at, the people who held the raffle actually won the raffle, so it can happen." And it's very funny, Mark, that you're the man who's in control of it.
I know, but I literally won by what, 2 points?
How convenient!
Yeah, I mean, it was tight. I mean, you got one perfect result, but yeah, exactly.
I've done a Villa.
You've done a Villa, but yeah, just done a Villa. You had 1 week where you sort of.
It's funny when I actually put money on things, I'm up a lot of money, but then when there's nothing at stake, maybe I'm a bit.
I think you go with your heart more than your head.
I'm a bit like Newcastle then, aren't I? When it matters. I don't know, maybe I'm the opposite of Newcastle, I'm not sure.
Well, yeah.
So let's give us a rundown what happened anyway.
Well, last week?
Yeah.
Well, I didn't get any perfect results. I got 5 scores right, which was the Man United game and Newcastle. I won't go through all of them, but yeah, I got a few right. Zach, you got 3 results correct, but no scores. And Rob, you got 2 results correct and 1 perfect score, which was 2-0 Liverpool.
I nearly got the West Ham one exactly the wrong way around, didn't I?
West Ham 5, Swansea 1. In fact, we lost 4-1.
Because we were talking about the previous week's matches, aren't we? We didn't.
Yeah, so that was tight, but you know, there
so,
we go.
So, yeah, alright, well, Nando's then. Yeah,
okay. So, Zach, well, whatever we do, we'll take a photo and put it up on the website on our Facebook, definitely. But, so, what we're going to do then, we're going to come back and do a Euro. Once Euro's up and running, we'll do a show, Euro special, a couple
of them. Wait a second.
Do you want to read these out? Because you wrote them, right?
No, it's alright. Sure? Can you read my rating?
I'll give it a go.
Yeah.
Right, gents. Predictions. We are going to do some predictions. We've just decided.
Yeah.
Zach has come up with his idea. Why don't we do Euro predictions?
Yeah.
So what is it? This is the
first round of matches, yeah.
First round of matches. Alright, so I'm going to be rubbish at this because I'm international predictions for me are just nearly impossible.
I don't think any of us religiously watch every single international team playing every game. We made the point that I think I've seen Hungary play once in 30 years. Seriously. Yeah. I mean, they haven't been qualified for anything.
Yeah, since 86.
I don't watch Hungary friendlies or qualifiers against other teams. I mean, they've never been
usually televised.
They have never been in a group with Ireland.
I think it's safe to say they're pretty shy still.
Yeah. Probably. But we're starting with France-Romania, aren't we? So,
okay. France-Romania. Oh, I mean, France, I'm going to have to go, you know, home nation, opening the tournament. It's going to be a routine win. I'm going to say 3-0, France. What do you reckon?
France at home, obviously, aren't they?
Yeah.
Romania, always decent. But yeah, France to win 2-0.
2-0, yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to go 4-0.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because Romania are one of the worst teams there, I think.
Okay. Rob, Switzerland, Albania.
How have Albania qualified? I didn't notice that.
I know, yeah. Albania and Iceland are there. It's
fantastic. I remember Iceland. They're fantastic, weren't they? Top of the group with Holland in it.
Albania were one of those teams, Skripiria, wasn't it? They would always finish bottom of the qualifying groups, and now they're in the finals. So
yeah. I think Switzerland are actually quite decent now. I don't think it's the hardest of games for them. Not
probably
that I've
Albania
seen Albania
as well. Yeah.
Not that I've seen Albania, but I think Switzerland should come through that. Let's go for another 2-0.
2-0, yeah. What are you reckon, Zachary?
I think Switzerland are always moderately decent side, but fragile. I'm going to go for 1-1. I'm going to think it's a bit of a shock.
1-1.
And I'm buying the next round to Nando's as well.
Yeah. I'm going to say 3-1 to Switzerland. That's my feeling. Zach, England, Russia.
England versus the mighty Russia. I think 2-1 England.
Really? Okay. 2-1 England. I think it's going to be a tie. I'm not sure. I'm going to go 1-0 to England, I think.
Just because I've seen it all before with England and I still don't like the manager, I'm going to say 1-1.
Many teams that win the tournament though start off with a not great result.
That's a good point. Yeah,
I think there was three World Cups in a row where the team that ended up winning it lost the first game.
No, I do think England could go very far. I just sort of there's something about them still that you know you've got to have question marks over them and they never start well. So I'll go for a draw. I'll take a draw to be honest and win the next two.
I'll take it as Wales.
That's Wales.
Wales, Slovenia. I reckon Wales will win this. I reckon they're going to win this 2-0. That's my feeling.
Yeah, I think Wales will come through. I think they'll win 1-0.
Gareth Bale definitely to score the goal. Yeah.
I think it's going to be a 1-1 draw.
Okay. 1-1. Rob, Germany, Ukraine. I've got a good game, I think.
Yeah. Germany routine 2-0 win.
Yeah, I think Germany, do you think they're the favourites into this, the Germans?
I'd say they probably are. The world champions and, you know.
Yeah, they've got to be going
into
favourites.
They lost a few games in the qualifiers. So we beat them and also Poland beat them and Scotland nearly gave them, did them in Hampden Park as well. But
yeah,
you'd think Germany would have gone for Ukraine 2-1 though, I think.
Yeah, 2-1. Sneak one. Oh, 2-1. Yeah, I think they'll start off. Well, do you know what though? As you say, the big teams might slip straight away. I'm going to go 1-1. Sod it. Zachary, Spain versus the Czech Republic.
No, we've got Poland, Northern Ireland. Sorry.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. I do apologise. Apologise. Poland, Northern Ireland.
You know, Milik and what's his name? Lewandowski.
Lewandowski.
Two quality players and. They should create enough to 2-0 Poland.
2-0, yeah.
Sorry, lads.
I think it's out at Northern Ireland. I think they're going to really struggle. I'm going to go with 3-0. To Poland.
I'd like to see Northern Ireland do well, but yeah, I agree with Zach. What you were saying beforehand, I think they might really struggle now they got there. And Poland are really tasty. Poland actually one of the dark horses to win it. Yeah. You know, with the firepower they got. So I'm going to 4-1 to Poland.
4-1, yeah. Okay. Who's this? Is Rob, isn't it?
Spain, Czech Republic.
Spain, Czech Republic, Rob.
I think Spain on the side they were showed that at the last World Cup.
No.
They're still a very good side, aren't they? Still got great players. Be interesting to see their play up front.
Nobody as usual.
Well, exactly.
I mean, as you say, they've dropped quite a lot of players.
Yeah, Costa's not there, is he? Zalo's hasn't been picked, so he's someone new.
In the last European Championships, they didn't really play with a striker.
The false nine.
The false nine. That
winds you up, Zach, doesn't it?
Really winds me up, yeah.
And I don't think the Czech Republic got the same standard players that they used to have. I think Spain will win 2-1.
Yeah, okay. What do you reckon, Zachary?
I would have said 2-1 as well, but I have a policy of not saying the same thing, so I'm going to say 3-2. That's my general policy, it's called 1-1 each opener.
I think it's going to be a draw. I'm going to go with 0-0.
0-0.
Well, they're going to be strikers.
Sure. I mean, you think about it, we can make all these predictions, and then the last World Cup when Spain lost the first match 5-1. Who would have predicted that?
Yeah, that's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
So is it me?
It's you, Zach. Turkey, Croatia.
Two teams I'm very, very familiar with. Croatia, yeah, they've got a lot of good players in European leagues. And Turkey, apart from Turan, don't really know too much about them. But I'm going to go for 2-2 draw.
2-0, yeah.
Ooh, that's what I was going to do.
Turkey, Croatia. I think Croatia win this. I'm going to say 1-0 to Croatia.
This is quite fun, actually. It's a bit more uninhibited. It's like, you know, yeah, it's you just like, think of a lot less. You know?
What do you reckon?
Well, I know Turkey and Croatia have both got some tasty players going forward, but you never know how they're actually going to play once they get there, because the opening games are normally quite cagey, aren't they?
Yeah.
Mm. I was going to say 2-0, so I'll say 1-1.
1-1, okay.
Because that went for 2-0.
It's not actually policy that you have to, but no. Kind of,
Right, so Zach, it's you. Belgium, Italy.
As we're going to win against Sweden, we could do it with that being a draw.
He's going to be hard against
Belgium. Yeah, 1-1.
1-1. Well, it's just because you want that. I think Italy will beat Belgium. I think they'll start with a win. I think it's going to be 2-0 to Italy.
Italy, again, I've looked at their squad and you sort of think that is, you know, it's not inspiring it's light, at all.
Yeah.
You know, but they always seem. And they don't always actually seem to find a way, but you always expect them to go quite far, don't you?
Italian football is just absolutely in the doldrums at the moment, really. I mean, from what it used to be, it's still one of the stronger nations in Europe, but...
They still made the final 4 years ago, didn't they? No one really expected that.
Yeah.
But I think they don't have as many stars as they used to. But this being the opening group game, two of the favourites, I think it's going to be a really cagey 0-0.
Yeah,
0-0,
okay.
I'll take that. That looks like 6-0.
Republic of Ireland, Sweden.
2-0 Ireland. No, 2-1. Zlatan will score 1.
You remember them? Is that what you're going with?
Yeah, Shane Long and John Walters.
I'll put that in. I reckon it's going to be 1-0 to Ireland.
Yay! That's more likely score, actually.
So is that I'm going to go for a 2-1 win to Sweden?
I have a feeling you might, yeah.
Oh, Jesus. Portugal, Iceland, Rob, what do we reckon?
Well, Iceland were superb in their group, weren't they? And they had Holland in there, a couple of other big sides, and they topped it.
They had the Czech Republic as well, weren't they? I think they're the two teams that came in the group.
And Portugal, from what I've seen, still relying very heavily on Ronaldo, as any team would.
Yeah.
Got him in the side. This might be the shock of the opening phase. I think I'm going to go for a 2-1 win to Iceland.
Oh, that's great. Loving it.
I'm doing exactly the same, but 1-0.
1-0 Iceland, okay.
Iceland are very well
organised. Well, I'm not going to do the same. I still think Portugal will beat them. I'm going to go 1-0 to Portugal. Ronaldo just scored from 48 yards. Zachary, last one. Austria, Hungary.
Oh, tasty one.
The
two teams I know pretty much well. Hungary probably the ones I know the absolutely least about. But Austria, David Alaba, 1-0.
1-0, Austria.
Yeah.
I have no idea, anyway, so I'm going to go with 2-0.
10-10.
I honestly don't know much about Hungary at all, but I know Austria got a lot of really good young players, so I presume they're the better side. So I'll just go for 2-0 Austria.
2-0, I like it. This is good. I'm like,
to really being honest.
When does this kick off anyway? You know?
2 weeks.
2 weeks time. Yeah, yeah. 2 weeks.
First match is, let's have a look at our.
Let's get to
Panini UEFA 2016.
Thank you. Have you had any chance?
I forgot to message him, but I'm going to do it now.
Well, I believe, are you?
The first match is obviously it's Saint Denis, 10th of the 6th. The 10th, so it's Saturday week, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
I put 2 weeks off work actually for the start of this. Wasn't actually for
really?
This.
You've got a sort of life that you have.
No, no, I thought I was going to go on holiday and then the Swedish, but I dumped you.
We
back
forgot
in
about
January.
Anthony Martial, didn't we?
I've still got these 2 weeks.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah.
Brilliant.
Great.
So, 2 weeks
it's been, a bumper edition this week, lads.
It has been, yeah. Just, yeah. Yeah, it's quite a long.
I'd say we're pushing an hour now, but.
Euro, we'll come back, and once the Euros kick off, we'll come back and do some shows
yeah.
right and then.
Yeah.
But as essentially, this will be the last of this season, and we'll just do some Euro
so
specials.
Thanks for listening over the last year.
It's been a year.
Well done to Leicester City. Yeah. Well done to Manchester United.
And well done to Aston Villa.
And well done to Aston Villa, yeah.
They're fantastic. Yeah. All right.
Thanks for coming.
Cheers.
Bye.
Thousand miles they fly. How do they know which way to go? Somehow they always seem to know. They say there's Mother Nature in everything we see. Wish I had.